You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to the MLB.com Ballpark Dimensions podcast. I'm your host, Mike Petriello, a writer and analyst at MLB.com, joined by MLB.com national content editor, Matt Myers. It is Thursday, May 13th. We're going to talk about Gerrit Cole. We're going to talk about what the Phillies are doing to poor Bryce Harper. We're going to talk about the Mariners calling up their future today. Matt is going to educate us all on why you should never be a left-handed pitcher throwing against the White Sox. And we will get to some rants and interesting guys that you should know. Matt, I had a question for you before we get into what Gerrit Cole is doing. You have, in the last couple of days, I think, done something I haven't done yet in a while, which is attend a baseball game. And if I'm not mistaken, you didn't go for work, not as media, like you went and sat as a fan in the seats. And I'm so jealous because I haven't done it in like a year and a half. And I plan to soon. I just haven't been able to make it work yet. Was it everything you hoped it would be? Like, was it just wonderful?
It was pretty wonderful. And I'm looking forward to going back. I have a Brooklyn Cyclones game on my docket for this week, and maybe another Mets game the following week. So I'm very excited. I'm trying to make up for lost time. You know, certainly easing back into it with the reduced capacity is very nice. Not just because you don't feel claustrophobic at all, but there's also no lines for anything. So being able to get like Shake Shack at Citi Field with no line is sort of wonderful in its own right. If they're, so there's also like other like kind of nice things that have come with it. So, I'm going to speak more about my ballpark experience later in the show. And if that's not a teaser, I don't know what is.
Wow. Okay. Well, I can't wait for that. I did want to start off by talking about Gerrit Cole, who like, I want to have a like deep intellectual thought about this or some like analytical proof that he's doing something differently. And I just keep looking at 78 strikeouts to three walks. And all I can do is just kind of laugh. Like 78 strikeouts, three walks. He had 12 walks last night against Tampa Bay. He has not walked anybody since April 12th. That's over a month ago. He's gone five straight starts without a walk. He's faced 191 batters. He has three walks. And there's like a lot of different stats that are here to talk about this. But I think the thing that's the funniest to me is he has not walked a non-Blue Jay this season. His three walks have come once to Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and twice to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And that's it. Those are all the walks. Andrew Simon, our friend and colleague, pointed out that in the history of baseball up until this season, there had never been a starter who had a five-start stretch with zero walks and at least 49 strikeouts. And now Gerrit Cole and Corbin Burns have each done it this season. Lucas Apostolaris from Baseball Perspectives pointed out that Cole is now at 56 strikeouts since his last walk. That is tied for the third longest this century behind Greg Maddux, who had 61 in 2001, and Liam Hendricks, who had 77 in 2019, excluding intentional walks. I don't actually remember that happening, but he was a reliever, so it's like a different thing entirely. 78 strikeouts to three walks. And I think the thing that stands out to me the most is like in any normal timeline, a guy with this reputation, like he's obviously was the number one pick and he's been very good for a couple of years, to have 78 strikeouts and three walks, you'd say, without question, this is the best pitcher in baseball. And I don't think you can say that right now, not with DeGrom and Burns and Bieber. Like maybe you would make the argument that Cole is, but it's not clear. Like it's not far and away. It's obviously him. And that just says a lot about how ridiculous pitching is right now to me.
Yeah, the 78, people always always throw around like video game numbers, like, oh, these are video game numbers. But like, that's probably the most video game number I've seen yet, like 78 strikeouts and three walks. Because like when you play video games, right, you never walk anyone. Like it just doesn't happen. You can like control almost exactly where a pitch goes. So that is just an insane number. When it comes to the best pitcher in baseball conversation, I sort of feel like DeGrom has become the default answer, and he's certainly not the wrong answer, but Gerrit Cole is very much in that conversation. I think that the one place where you might kind of give, I don't know, if an edge to Cole, and I'm not saying it's just those two pitchers because he has Bieber's in that conversation. I actually think, Corbin Burns, maybe even Brandon Woodruff is, on the fringes of that conversation as well after another dominant start last night. I think the one edge you you might give to Cole is maybe a little durability. You know, DeGrom has this, this happens basically every year, it seems like, where he kind of, you know, sits himself out for a small period. He seems to know his body well, and thus far has been, knock on wood, managed to avoid serious injuries since, you know, he became DeGrom. He had Tommy John surgery when he was in the minors. But I just looked it up over the last, going back to the start of 2018, which was DeGrom's like first Cy Young season, Garrett Cole does have more innings pitched. He has the most innings pitched in baseball since the start of 2018. But the gap is actually smaller than I thought. It's only 9 innings. You know, Cole's at 538. Aaron Nola's number 2 at 533. And DeGrom is at 529. So it's actually, it's smaller than I realized. But I was watching a little bit of Cole last night, and he was just ridiculous. and, you know, it's, you watch Cole and you're like, oh, he's the best pitcher. Then you watch DeGrom, you're like, oh no, he's the best pitcher. And then you watch Bieber, it's like, oh no, he's the best pitcher. It's an interesting debate.
Yeah, from our point of view, so it's a little bit after 1 o'clock on Thursday, in about 35 minutes, Corbin Burns is going to start against St. Louis. So by the time you listen to this podcast, you will have known what will have happened. And I feel like, I don't know, I like to root for absurdity and chaos. And so I kind of want to see how far he can go without a walk. I really liked what Sarah Langs wrote the other day, like trying to find the 3-ball counts to see how close he came to a walk. And it wasn't even terribly close because he's just obscenely good. So do you think he can get through another game without a walk? I guess that you should probably bet against that just because like that's the field. And yet I feel like he could.
Sure. Why not? I mean, the way he's been going, you know, like I wouldn't bet against him. So who would your pick be for best pitcher in baseball right now? And do you think there's anyone else that should be in that conversation?
No, I think those are the big four right now. Listen, before the season, we do these top 10 lists for MLB Network, and I picked Bieber. And I mean, I kind of picked it as like a 1 and 1A, Bieber and DeGrom, but I picked Bieber just because I was a little worried about like DeGrom's never-ending velocity increase, and I sort of felt like that couldn't continue indefinitely. And look, he's on the injured list right now. You know, seems like it's not that bad, fortunately. A 4-way tie. Can I do that? Cole, DeGrom, Bieber, and Burns. Like, no disrespect to, you know, Woodruff and John Means or whoever else you want to throw in there, but it's a 4-way tie. That's what it is for me right now.
Well, I don't think Burns is he doesn't have quite the track record yet. So I think there's the big three. Like, I think that, like, you know, Burns doesn't have quite the track record yet to be in the conversation with Cole and Bieber and DeGrom. So I think I was sort of, you know, I'd sort of put him down a peg in tier two with his teammate Brandon Woodruff. I'm not sure he's better than Woodruff. Interesting.
49 strikeouts and no walks. Come on,
man. Yeah, but it's 1 month. You know, it's 1 month. It's like Woodruff has been pretty good for a couple of years now.
Well, Burns was good last year too, right? Like I had him in my Cy Young mix. He just missed out being a qualified pitcher by like 2 outs, so no one paid attention.
I think it's not a no brainer. I think that there's the tier two to me, which includes probably, at this point, I mean, Max Scherzer still probably has an argument to being in tier one just based on his, you know, career. But I think he's maybe a step below those guys now. So to me, there's that tier two, which is Scherzer, probably Zach Wheeler's in that conversation. And then Burns, Woodruff, maybe Bauer. That's when it starts to get a little, you know, a little less clear. But to me, it's the big three right now in terms of combination of like present dominance and track record, Cole, Bieber, and DeGrom.
I like the idea that you could make the argument, and I don't think you're wrong, that Cole is the third best starting pitcher in baseball right now. 78 strikeouts, 3 walks, insane track record. Pitchers, as it turns out, are really, really good. We will take a quick break and we will come back with our 3-batter minimum.
Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo. Or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about. With a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/MLB and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/MLB today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. Roman is the official partner of Major League Baseball. That's GetRoman.com/MLB. GetRoman.com/MLB.
We are back on the Ballpark Dimensions podcast. Mike Petriello and Matt Myers. We're going to move into the three-batter minimum. Our first topic is Bryce Harper, who, depending on how you value such things, is either having a fantastic season or a terrible season. I'm going to say fantastic season. He's got an OPS of over 1,000. He's got a 181 OPS plus, where 100 is league average. That's actually not that far off his 2015 season, which was like phenomenally good. Bryce Harper has also driven in 11 runners this year. Matt, do you know how many other batters, have driven in at least 11 runners this year?
I don't know, a lot.
187 other hitters as of this morning. This includes like Garrett Hampson and Stephen Vogt. 187 other hitters have driven in as many runs as he has. And so you might think to yourself, oh, well, that's not great. Like, he's supposed to be there to drive in runs. And it's not even that, like, he's not performing with runners on base. Like, he's actually hitting better with runners on base. He has 7 homers and 11 RBIs. And maybe you can guess where this is going. All 7 of those home runs are solo home runs. And the reason is the Phillies are never, ever putting anybody on base for him. And I'm going to kind of like split this off into two things. One is that the Phillies offense isn't very good. And two is that they shouldn't hit him third. Okay. So here's the thing. He's got 11 RBIs. 7 of them are himself because he had solo homers. He has 4 other runs driven in. Here are the names. Okay. He's driven each of these 4 names in one time. Zach Eflin once. He's a pitcher. Roman Quinn once, Brad Miller once, Andrew McCutchen once. Do you notice like a prominent Phillies name who's hit second most of the year who's not on that list? Who am I missing there?
Rhys Hoskins!
Bryce Harper is hit behind Rhys Hoskins 23 times this year, and he has driven him in, this is true, zero times. And the reason for this is that they just don't have anybody on base for Harper. Like, I'm going to write about this. I looked it up. He has only 14% of his plate appearances coming with runners in scoring position. That's the second lowest to Tommy Edman, who's a leadoff hitter. And the two guys behind Harper, Robbie Grossman and Colton Wong, are leadoff hitters. The MLB average is 25%. This is mostly because McCutchen, he's been better lately, but overall he has, you know, not been that great. And Hoskins sort of like has completely changed into a different hitter. You know, he used to be like this high patience, like drew a lot of walks and had some decent power. And now he's just become like entirely strikeouts and home runs.
He's two true outcomes now. He lost the third one.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if you look at the first two spots in the order, the Phillies have a 305 on base, which is the fourth worst. Now, let's talk about Harper hitting third for a second. I think we can agree, I would hope, that he's their best hitter. And while I generally try not to care about lineup order that much, because I feel like it's never worth how much effort people put into talking about it, the reason you're not really like supposed to, quote unquote supposed to, hit your best hitter third is because it is the spot most likely to come up with nobody on and two outs. Can you guess which hitter in baseball has come up with nobody on and two outs the most in baseball?
Bryce Harper?
It's Bryce Harper. And like, I'm not saying Joe Girardi's got a ton of options because the Phillies offense isn't that good. And, you know, he has actually dropped Hoskins lately to move up Gene Segura, which is fine. But man, how do you have 7 homers and an OPS over 1,000 and 11 RBIs? Like,
the Phillies, by the way, are just like the weirdest team. They play like crazy games. There's like something weird happens in a Phillies game, like basically every night, you know. Even so, like last night, you know, was the Wednesday night against the Nationals. Actually, like, it was a game. I was like, oh my God, the Phillies are going to blow another one, where like Bryce Harper and Odubel Herrera like collided and they lost the ball in the outfield and collided and allowed Alex Avila to hit a triple. You know, something went wrong when Alex Avila hits a triple. And it looked like
a giant air quotes triple.
Exactly. And then of course the Herrera sort of, you know, made up for it by hitting a game tying home run and they won extra innings. But like last Saturday night, one of the craziest games, they went up by 3 runs in the 12th against the Braves and lost. The week before on Sunday Night Baseball, they had that crazy game against the Mets where like Hoskins hit the ball that hit the railing that would have been the game tying home run. The Phillies are just like, in some ways, you know, the most entertaining team. As a non-Philly fan, they play the most entertaining games in baseball this year. Hoskins seems to have, this feels like a conscious change of like, I'm going to try and change my approach. Like he is swinging more, he is walking a lot less, and he's just a less effective hitter overall. I almost wonder if like could see him try and like revert back to his old ways, or if he even, you know, if that's something you can sort of do mid-season. But he's just been, you know, he's got an OBP below 300, and his walk rate is half of what it normally is. So everything else is basically the same. It's just like his walk rate is half of what it normally is. And as a result, the Phillies are suffering and Bryce Harper's RBI opportunities are suffering.
Did you say like 3 minutes ago, maybe, that something weird happens in every Phillies game? That's all right. So they're in the top of the first right now. I don't have the video on, but I do have like game day up, and I don't know how to explain this entirely, but here's a description for the Phillies run. Bryce Harper advances to second base on a caught stealing error by first baseman Josh Bell. Andrew McCutchen scores. And I'm extremely interested to see what happened.
point proven in real time.
That's amazing. And I wish I could get this video to load because I want to see it. I think I've said this before. Like, we underrate Bryce Harper now, right? Like, because he's not Trout, but he's really good. Like, he's super good.
He is super good now, but I also think we can't forget that he did actually have like 2 or 3 years in there where he was just kind of like good as opposed to great. And I think that's kind of like where it maybe people sort of kind of checked out on him a little bit. Not that he was ever bad, but you know, he had, you know, in 2018 OPS plus of 133, good, not like otherworldly. 2019, 127, you know, like good, not otherworldly. So like for a while it was like, oh, this guy's like a good, you know, really good player, but it just felt like kind of a disappointment. Now he's actually putting up the last, you know, 2020 abbreviated year, but over the last 2 years now we're talking about a guy with a, you know, OPS plus of 167 over the last 2 years. You know, that's 87 games, more than half a season in a normal year. And it's like, okay, this is kind of closer to the vintage MVP Bryce Harper. And it is still his age 28 season, so which is kind of wild because he's been, you know, he debuted as a teenager. So there's, I won't say the best is yet to come, but I think a lot of like greatness is yet to come for him, not to rewrite the narrative, but to kind of like reposition the narrative of like, oh yeah, this guy might actually be like, you know, on a Hall of Fame track.
I just watched this video, by the way. First and third, Harper was at first, McCutchen was at third with two outs, and Harper got picked off, and as he's running to second, McCutchen breaks for home, and Josh Bell makes a not a great throw to home, and so that's where the error came in. Josh Bell has just been at a really rough introduction to Washington, by the way. So at least there's an explanation for what seemed like a very weird play. Our second item here, the Mariners have made an important and notable roster move. They have selected right-handed pitcher Paul Sewald from AAA Tacoma. Oh, and also top pitching prospect Logan Gilbert and top outfield prospect Jared Kelenic. Important Kelenic. It's not Kelenic. It's not Kelenic. It is Kelenic. Two syllables. I'm excited to see how many people screw that up this year. And Gilbert and Kelenic are obviously each very highly regarded prospects. Kelenic's the number 4 overall prospect at MLB Pipeline. Gilbert is the number 33 overall prospect. And Sarah Langs and Jason Bernard, our two friends and colleagues, came up with something that I thought was pretty interesting. So MLB Pipeline began doing rankings in 2004. And this is only the third time since then that a team will have two top 100 prospects debut in the same game for the same team in the year they were ranked in the top 100. In 2015, it was Manny Margot and Hunter Renfro for the Padres. And in 2013, Christian Yelich and Jake Marisnyk for the Marlins. And I had completely forgotten that Jake Marisnyk was A Marlin or B, a top 100 prospect, but I guess he was. And this kind of feels like, you know, it's been a long rebuild in Seattle. This sort of feels like this is the step, right, to the next iteration of this. Like, they've been plucky, I suppose. They're 18-19. They're third in the West. They're not going to win the division this year. And, you know, Kelnick, after all of the terrible Kevin Mather comments, you know, went down to play six games at AAA and hit two homers and slugged .630. And Seattle's left fielders have been pretty bad so far, at .286 on base. Six different guys have played left field. I didn't mind that they wanted to get him some minor league time, but it's pretty clear that he's mashing there and Seattle's left fielders aren't very good. So he's up, and Gilbert is expected to start this evening against Cleveland. And I don't know how this is going to turn out for any of them, but it's kind of cool, I think, in like the history of a franchise, where you can maybe like look back on a day and be like, man, that was the day. Like, that was the day. Our, like, the guys came up. This is like, you know, the first start of the next, I don't know what Kelnick's going to be. I've heard like an outfield Chase Utley kind of guy, which is kind of cool. You know, like that was the first day and they were there on the same day. I just think that's cool if it ends up working out that way.
For sure. And it's a good, I mean, Mariners have the longest postseason drought in baseball. They have not been to the postseason since 2001, which is almost hard to believe. And I don't think they will make the postseason this year, but I do think they're improving their team right now and that like they could stay, you know, competitive, and stranger things have happened. And it's also just exciting for the fan base to finally have like this, you know, real like feel of like, okay, you know, the next wave is coming. Obviously the next, you know, the other big name is Julio Rodriguez, but he's still in high class A, so he's a little farther away. But you know, who knows, if he rakes, maybe you see him in September, depending on how that goes. If not, probably next year at the latest. And then you can kind of start to dream on the team a little bit. I also think that's a team that would probably start to look at spending in free agency a bit once they kind of have that base of talent available. And then given that the fact that the Astros are kind of like on the way down and the A's are just going to keep being the A's, which will mean like fluctuating between like good and bad totally unpredictably every year, there's the like you can start to see that path really, really open for the Mariners. I will admit, and I kind of want your take on this with Kelnick. Obviously, given my, you know, interest in the Mets in the past, I think that I've sort of been unable to sort of, I've never been really known how to view him as a prospect, you know, because like, you know, Mets fans, when they traded him, like he was like, oh my goodness, I can't believe they traded this guy. And then now he's like, you know, he's coming up and he's obviously a great prospect. But I feel like now some of the sort of the reports I'm reading are a little more tempered. I had actually asked Tom Tango if he could, you know, dig up, our colleague Tom Tango, if he could dig up some projections from, you know, we've worked in the past with like Dan Zaborski at Fangraphs and Brian Cartwright to do long-term projections for prospects when they've come up. And the projections were like, and I know projections are like modest generally by nature, but like they were modest in a way that I was like, oh, it almost was like I almost didn't want to share them because it was like they weren't that exciting. I'm kind of curious for your take on like how do you, I know you're not like a necessarily hardcore prospect guy, but like what's your kind of general take on Kelnick?
I think we haven't learned enough, and this isn't specific to him so much as it is to all prospects, about what the impact of the 2020 at the alternate site instead of minor league games will be. Like, it's wonderful that the minor leagues are back. Obviously, I think that's fantastic, and I'm excited to go to a Cyclones game as well. But, you know, I've also heard a number of players say, like, man, I grew so much at the alternate site because I was able to, like, really drill down on what I needed to do. All of which is a way of saying, like, before last week, the last time he played the minor league game, he was 19 years old in West Virginia, you know, or Modesto, I guess. I don't know how to wrap that into my projections, because I agree with you that the numbers weren't like elite necessarily, but he was also so young and highly touted. And I'm glad you brought this up, because I kind of had a related question for you, in the sense of you being someone who follows the Mets reasonably well. So they got Diaz, right? And in that first year in 2019, he was pretty rotten, and he was pretty good last year, and he's been pretty good this year. Can Mets fans like divorce the loss of Kelnick from how good Diaz has been, or is that always going to be on his shoulders?
Probably always on his shoulders. But like, you know, if the Mets make a playoff run and like Diaz is a part of it and it's like a big, you know, a big key, you know, contributor, I think it kind of changes the equation a bit. I mean, it's also like part of what I was saying, you know, about how to value him kind of goes back to that trade, right? Because let's say like, you know, amongst Mets fans, this is considered like the worst thing ever. And I think the trade was, I think it was bad for a variety of reasons, But the reality is, A, great prospects get traded all the time. Like, it's actually, I had one of our researchers come up with a list of, like, you know, top players now who are traded as prospects. And it was like way longer than I even realized. Just to name a few players who were traded as prospects: Trevor Bauer, Lucas Giolito, Trey Turner, Anthony Rizzo, Gleyber Torres, Zach Wheeler, Noah Syndergaard, Will Myers, Fernando Tatis Jr., Eloy Jimenez. Anyway, and the list goes on and on. It actually surprised me, because we think of how valued prospects are these days, and they are, but they still get traded a lot. The second thing I was going to say is, like, realistically, and it's possible that Kelnick like blows this out of the water, but like, what's like a real, you know, what's a realistic upside for him? Is it like Michael Conforto, like Austin Meadows, right? Like left-handed hitter with some power and athleticism, like realistic upside. Obviously it's possible, maybe he is Juan Soto and we just don't know it yet. Right.
He's not Juan Soto. I will confirm for you. He's not Juan Soto.
let's say, like, what do you think? What do you think? Is Conforto a reasonable, like, hey, like if he turned out to be Conforto, the Mariners would be thrilled, right?
I think the ceiling is probably higher than that, although I like Conforto very much. But Conforto is a very good player. He's like a regular all-star caliber player. You couldn't be disappointed.
Well, I guess that's sort of my question. If the Mariners had the option today, Michael Conforto's career or whatever is behind door number one, and door number one could be like total bust, they probably take Conforto's career, no?
Yes. I think that's right.
So go back to the trade. That's when I put it in that perspective, it's like Mets fans kind of got to get over it. Like, most likely he's going to be a good player, but even like the realistic upside is like not a player that like doesn't necessarily change the course of your organization. Like, prospects get traded all the time. Yeah, it was a bad trade, but like, you got to get over it.
I think what will help them get over it is the fact that everybody who executed that trade got fired. and the Mets are at the moment, what have they won, like 8 in a row, 8 or 9, something like that? That's pretty good. The other question I wanted to ask about the Mariners is, like, you know, we're looking towards their future now, right? Like, you know, you hope Gilbert will be a part of the rotation, and you hope, you know, Kelnick, and then eventually, as you said, Julio Rodriguez will be a big part of their lineup. Have you noticed that, like, Evan White has not hit even a little bit, like, at all in parts of two seasons now? He's got a 549 OPS. I know he's considered to be a very good defensive first baseman, and there's value in that. But, like, is there going to be a point soon? I know he signed a contract where he is not playing first base for them anymore. I don't know who they would replace him with, to be honest, but I'm kind of stunned at how poorly that has gone.
It might end up being, you know, it's probably a little too early to say this. And because he also contributes on defense, I think they can kind of hide things a little bit, but it might end up being just kind of like maybe a little bit of a sunk cost. Like, they like tried to take this chance. Like, hey, we're going to sign him basically before he's in the majors, and we're going to give him, like, you know, real money. But if he ends up being at all good, it's going to be like a really good, you know, good value from a team perspective. And it reminds me a little bit of, like, you know, when the Astros gave that deal, Jonathan Singleton, also a first baseman, who they gave like a, you know, I think it was $10 million guaranteed when he was still in the minors, and it just did not work out at all. But it was like, you know, we took a chance, and if it worked, it would have been like a fantastic bargain from a team perspective. And it hasn't played out, and you understand why players want that cost certainty. And, you know, that financial security, I should say. And that seems to, that could be, it could be a similar situation.
And in our third topic, we are going to talk about the White Sox. Did you know the White Sox have the highest run differential in baseball? We've kind of not been overly positive about Tony La Russa's moves this year, but you can't argue the fact that they've scored a lot of runs and not given up so many runs. And last night against the Minnesota Twins and J-Hap, they pounded him. 3 1/3 innings, 9 hits, 9 runs, 3 strikeouts, and 2 walks. The White Sox are now 8-1 against lefty starters. Last year, they were 14-0 against lefty starters. They are 22-1 against lefty starters over the last 2 years. That doesn't sound like an accident. I'm actually going to let Matt drive this one, because I know he's very passionate about this. Matt, please educate us on the Southsiders pounding lefty starters.
Well, they just crushed J-Hap last night. 9 runs allowed, the most he's ever allowed in his career. And I saw a friend of the podcast, Casey Bogoslaw, tweet out something like, LOL, I don't know why anyone even bothers starting a lefty against the White Sox anymore. And I thought, that does sound kind of familiar. I feel like we wrote something about this last year. And sure enough, we did. Our colleague Matt Kelly did a piece last September about how the White Sox destroyed left-handed pitching. In fact, they were 14-0 against left-handed starting pitchers in the shortened 2020 season. And it has continued this year. As you said, they're 8-1. And the numbers are just kind of comical in terms of weighted runs created plus against lefties. The White Sox are 156 for 100 is average. Number two is the Cardinals, and this is at 128. The Tigers are at 45. That gives you a little sense of how their season's going. I thought, you know, this year, Eloy Jimenez is hurt. Luis Robert got hurt. This will change. But not really, because the best hitter over the last 2 years against left-handed pitchers in baseball, and this is something I did not realize until this morning, has been Tim Anderson, who has a 240 weighted runs created plus against left-handers over the last 2 years. That's best in baseball. This is minimum 50 plate appearances. Yasmani Grandel ranks 14th. Jose Abreu ranks 47th. Luis Robert actually ranks 50th. Of course, he's now on the injured list. And it's also not exactly a fluke either, because I went and looked, and when it comes to expected weight on base, the White Sox are also the best in baseball against left-handed pitchers. I asked Andrew Simon, one of our researchers, to look into this to see, like, hey, just how crazy is it for a team to have this kind of record against left-handed pitchers? And, I mean, I don't know if I can expect them to maintain a 957 winning percentage against lefties as they have over the last two seasons. The only team to have a better winning percentage against left-handed pitchers over a two-season span is the 1943 and 1944 Reds. They actually had a three-year span where they had 846 winning percentage against left-handed. I actually now want to know more about the Reds during World War II, because that's kind of wild. But looking for a reason of, like, why the White Sox have sort of been secretly dominant and have the best run differential in baseball, their dominance against left-handed pitchers is a good place to start.
I think that's fascinating. They're also, you know, pretty good against right-handed pitchers too. I mean, I'm looking at it right now. They have the ninth best weighted on base against right-handed starters. And I remember, like, what was the biggest thing I thought they should have done over the winter was to get a powerful left-handed bat, like, say, Jock Peterson. And I think that maybe would have helped them against righties, although obviously, you know, not so good against left-handed pitching. Has your opinion just on the White Sox changed at all? Like, I know we've talked about La Russa a lot, and I don't even mean for that specifically, just in the sense of, like, you know, I kind of thought they would be neck and neck with the Twins, and the Twins are just, like, crashing and burning. I never bought into the Royals. Like, they had a hot start, and they've been terrible lately. Cleveland's actually only a game out, but I still think their offense is terrible. Like, the White Sox seem like the far and away front runner to me. And, you know, they've had injuries, but part of it's that, like, I'm super into Carlos Rodon, and Dylan Cease has started to throw strikes. Like, have you changed your general opinion on this team?
I have, in the sense, like, as listeners of this podcast know, I was all in on the offseason and preseason as the clear division favorites. But my opinion has changed just because, like, they're doing it in a little bit of a different way than I thought. You know, I was like, oh, I think Eloy Jimenez is going to, you know, hit 40 plus home runs, and Luis Robert's going to take a huge leap forward, and you know, Moncada is going to have a huge bounce back. He's been okay, but not great. So the fact that they're doing it, it's just in a different shape than I expected. And, you know, some of these starting pitchers coming along is a big reason why. And also Michael Kopech coming back and being very good from what we've seen thus far. So I still see them as the division favorite, but yes, I'm a little surprised at the way it has come to be.
Have you looked at Dallas Keuchel's line at all this year?
I have not.
So obviously Dallas Keuchel has never been like a Cole DeGrom flame-throwing strikeout beast. Like, that's not his game. He usually strikes out like 6 or 7 per nine, but he gets by with a lot of ground balls and soft contact. Dallas Keuchel so far this year has faced 180 batters, and he has 18 strikeouts, which is like, how does he not have a 9 ERA?
This is like some, like, you know, Randy Jones, like, you know, 1974 Padres Cy Young season kind of stuff. And if you're unfamiliar with Randy Jones, I suggest you go take a look at his baseball reference page, because it is wild.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm just like surface level eyeballing his baseball reference page here, so I don't have any deeper thoughts onto why. But the simple fact he's doing that and he does not have like a 9.5 ERA is like astounding to me. And now I've got something to look into for Dallas Keuchel. We will take a quick break, and we will be back with our Players You Need to Know and our rants and raves.
This past year has shown us that without your health, you have nothing. If you're not well, you can't work, look after yourself, or take care of your family. You can't enjoy the life you've worked so hard to build. That's why you need to prioritize taking care of your long-term health today, before it goes from good to bad to worse. So invest in your long-term health with Forward. Forward is intelligent medicine with a personal touch. Their doctors are dedicated to catching top killers like cancer and heart disease early before it's too late. And catching them early could save you tens of thousands of dollars in the long run. Everyone's health history is different, which is why Forward doctors personalize a health plan with you, based on your genetics, lifestyle, and biometrics to achieve long-term results and ensure nothing gets missed. It's time to invest in a doctor that's invested in you. Go to GoForward.com today to protect your future health. That's GoForward.com. GoForward.com.
We are back on the Ballpark Dimensions podcast, Mike Petriello and Matt Myers. Each week, we like to focus on a maybe less heralded guy that we find interesting. And each week I do this, more often than not, I think I end up on like some totally rando reliever who showed up and like struck out 10 in his first four games. And Matt correctly gives me a hard time for it. And I am, again, going to talk about a very rando reliever, but for a very different reason. He's not even that good. And in fact, I have a personal beef with him. I'm upset with him. We're going to talk about Blue Jays reliever Travis Bergen. And if you don't know anything about him, perfectly understandable. The Blue Jays have actually continually tried to be rid of Travis Bergen. He was drafted by the Blue Jays in 2015 in the seventh round. He was picked by the Giants as a Rule 5 pick in 2019, got into 21 games for the Giants. But if you're a Rule 5 pick, you have to last the season with the team or be offered back to the original team. And he didn't. So he went back to the Blue Jays. And then last year, on August 31st, when the Blue Jays traded for Robbie Ray, who we need to talk about, by the way, some other time, Robbie Ray has been amazing. They traded Travis Bergen for Robbie Ray, and he got into a couple games for the Diamondbacks. And then this spring in February, he was purchased by Toronto from the Diamondbacks. He's back with Toronto. None of this matters. It's just some background on Travis Bergen. Here's what's interesting to me. This spring, for the first time, we had in most of the Florida spring training parks, StatCast hardware set up. Not all the parks, but most of them, which we'd never had before. And I noticed, and Corey Schwartz, who's our pitch classification maven, kind of pointed out to me, Travis Bergen had thrown 66 pitches this spring, and all of them were four-seam fastballs. All of them. And we made sure it wasn't like a classification error. No, it was true. It was real. And he was actually pretty decent. 11 strikeouts and 25 batters faced. So I kind of filed that away as, that's interesting. Well, I kept an eye on him to start the regular season. On April 28th, he threw 13 pitches, all fastballs. And on May 1st, he threw 16 pitches, all fastballs. And on May 3rd, his first two pitches were fastballs. And at this point, we were up to 97 straight four-seam fastballs. And I was like, I needed three more pitches because I figured once I get up to 100 straight four-seamers, I can go take this to Matt and say, Matt, you got to let me write about this. It's so weird. This guy is, he doesn't throw 98 or anything like that. Once we got up to 100 straight four-seam fastballs, I was going to say, let me write a weird story. And then he threw a curveball. And now it's 87 four-seamers and six curveballs for the season, you know, plus the 66 from the spring. He has right now, dating back to 2008, with all seasons of at least 50 pitches thrown, the second highest four-seam percentage on record, 93.5%. Only Jake McGee, who had a 96% a year or two ago, is higher. So here's to you, Travis Bergen, and your super weird approach to pitching and your inability to throw three more four-seamers and let me get a cool story out of it.
There still might be a story there, but I guess we can discuss that offline. I said earlier in the podcast, I was going to talk a little bit about, my return to the ballpark. And, that's where this comes in because I went to my first game, on last Friday night and, it was the famous, Ratcoon game, although I was in the ballpark. So I was at the ballpark, so I kind of missed all that, which was actually kind of nice because I was not distracted by that ridiculousness. But as some of you may remember, the Mets were down 4-0. They came back and tied the game. And so it went to extra innings. And they started with the runner on second. It was Pete Alonso. They intentionally walked Dom Smith. And Kevin Pillar came up. And my wife said, oh, like, you know, I said, oh, they're probably going to bunt now. My wife said, why would they bunt? Like, bunting's bad. And I was like, I was very proud of my wife for saying that earlier in the game when Francisco Lindor had bunted, like when it was unclear if he should, like in the ninth inning he'd bunted. And she was like, why did he do that? That was really stupid. It was a wonderful moment. And I was like, well, you know, they only need one run here and they can just walk off. If they get second and third, like this might be a play. Of course, Pilar then, and then I was like, also, there's this guy, they only have one guy left on the bench. It's this guy, Patrick Mazika. He's basically never had a big league hit. I could see the Diamondbacks wanting to just like force Patrick Mazika to be the hero so they could easily just, you know, if they'd almost want Pilar to bunt because then that gives him a reason to walk the next hitter and bring up Mazika. Of course, Pilar hit a fly ball that advanced Alonso to third. And then they intentionally walked Jonathan Villar to bring up Patrick Mazika. And Patrick Mazika hits a ground ball about 10 feet that somehow allowed the run to score. It was like the perfect like swinging bunt, as they say, that allowed the run to score. And it was kind of charming. This guy who's never had a major league hit and is probably just kind of a 4A guy had this walk-off fielder's choice in a ridiculous way. And it was a fun return to the ballpark. And it was like, it was great. And then I went back on Tuesday night to see the Mets play the Orioles. And sure enough, they tied the game in the ninth. And Patrick Mazika comes up again and with a runner on third and hits a slow ground ball to the right side just enough to score the run. And he became the first player in Major League history to have three. He also got an RBI and a walk. So he became the first player to have three RBIs before he got his first hit since Cincinnati's Joe Brovia in 1955. He is also the first player since RBIs became an official stat in 1920 with multiple walk-off RBIs within his first four career games. So Patrick Mazika is the guy I want to talk about. A little background on him, because I've now gone down a Patrick Mazika wormhole. He's actually from Massachusetts, some town I had, you know, even though I, you know, went to college in New England, I've spent a lot of time in the New England area. It's something with a W that I can now escapes me. It's near Springfield. He somehow went to college at Stetson University in Florida, which is not really a connection you hear. Stetson is famous because it is actually the alma mater of Jacob deGrom, Corey Kluber, and also Logan Gilbert, who is making his debut.
He beat me to it. I was going to say it.
And I actually went to back in my college sports television days, I once covered a game at Stetson University in which Corey Kluber pitched. I did not even realize it at the time that he was going to become Corey Kluber. And Stetson University is in DeLand, Florida. And the most notable thing about that game is that they had, and this was like 15 years ago, I'm not sure if this still exists, but they had like a section of like diehard fans they called the Bleacher Creatures. And you're going to say, oh, you know, it's just a bunch of college bros. You know, no, it was a bunch of guys who lived in a nearby retirement home who went to every single Stetson game. They were like guys in their 70s who would come and just like make wise ass remarks and heckle the opposition. It was pretty delightful. So that was my memory of going to a Stetson University baseball game. Patrick Mazika, though, I will say he was well suited for that situation because the one thing he does not do in his minor league career is strike out. He's had multiple seasons where he's had more walks than strikeouts. And in fact, in college one year hit 382. So, and in the minors one year hit 354. So he's a single sitting catcher. If you saw him, because the Mets ripped his shirt off, he has the physique of just any guy, which is also sort of encouraging for those of us who aspire to be a professional athletes. And he's become a wonderful, wonderful folk hero.
I love that. And I was also reading that part of the reason that he's so loved by the Mets is that he came up with a lot of those guys, right? Like he's close friends with Jeff McNeil, and he was on some minor league teams with Pete Alonso. So even though he's not, you know, likely to be that kind of caliber of major leaguer, they just like all love him as a dude, you know, like that's important to them. And you said something yesterday that I thought was funny. His name came up in an internal meeting and you said it's like remembering a guy in real time, which I thought was beautiful because it's kind of true. And yes, I was going to have like all sorts of Stetson facts. You forgot Chris Johnson, former Astros and Diamondbacks infielder Chris Johnson, but Logan Gilbert is also from Stetson. I thought that was pretty fun. We are going to finish off with our rants and raves, and mine comes from last weekend. The Dodgers and the Angels were playing, and the Dodgers were pounding the Angels. They were up 13-0 in the middle of the game, and Angels, I guess he's a right fielder now, Taylor Ward came up and tried and failed to lay down a bunt. He tried to get a bunt hit. He didn't even do it. And the Angels ended up coming back and only losing that game by 3 runs. That's right. They turned a 13-0 deficit into a 14-11 loss. And like, what are we doing here? Dave Roberts and Clayton Kershaw were like really upset that he tried to bunt in a 13-0 game. And I just, are we not past this yet? Here's Roberts's quote was literally, "It's just not a good baseball play." And you know me, I'm not the one out here like saying yay bunting ever. You know what's a good baseball play? Trying to get on base when you're down 13-0. Because hey, you might make it 14-11, right? Like you should be thrilled this guy is trying to give you an out by bunting. And I was surprised at how like what a 1974 opinion that felt like, that someone tried to bunt against you up 13-0 and maybe worry about not blowing a 13-0 lead. That was my opinion on that.
Well said. My rant is going to be about a Twitter comment by a political reporter who I will not name that kind of was getting dunked on pretty regularly on Twitter yesterday, and with good reason. He said, "Don't fall for the BS that today's baseball is great because players are good or so good. They all kind of suck now. No one fields anymore. No one does anything fundamental. No relief pitcher has more than one pitch. So an 0-2 count is meaningless because a hitter knows what's coming." And, you know, it was pretty much destroyed by most of baseball Twitter. And it's a ridiculous take. I've sort of kind of gone into these kinds of, takes before that baseball players are actually insanely good. In fact, I saw someone tweet that they were like, if anything, baseball players are too good. And the complaints about baseball, you know, the pace of play and everything are because players have gotten too good and almost like broken the game.
Yes. Yes.
And, DJ Short had a Twitter response to this that I thought was well said. He said, "Modern baseball is not without criticism, but you somehow selected like the lowest stuff on the list of things to complain about." And I think that is very well said.
There's like I guess you have to be like extremely online to get this joke, but like every day there's one main character of Twitter and all you want to do is not be that person, right? And this guy was that guy, at least in baseball Twitter. Like he's still getting dunked on right now. And it's just like, some people are trying to reason and a lot of people are just sending like pitching ninja GIFs of like 100-mile-an-hour fastballs moving 3 different ways. And I'm with you on that. And I guess I'm just surprised how many people think that what's happening is because the players aren't trying to be good. When I agree with you, it's that the players are obscenely good, like insanely deeply, deeply good. That will do it for this week's podcast. Don't miss an episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you are enjoying the show or have any suggestions, please leave us a rating and a review. Thanks for listening to the Ballpark Dimensions podcast. We will see you next week.
Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, "I lost my mojo." Or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, "I had a long day at work," or "Sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it." But with Roman, it is easy to talk about. With a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/MLB and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/MLB today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. Roman is the official partner of Major League Baseball. That's GetRoman.com/MLB. GetRoman.com/MLB.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.